We are going to jump into some scripture before we jump into our sermon. I'm reading from Matthew 20, verse 20 to 28. Then the mother of Zebedee's sons came to Jesus with her sons and, kneeling down, asked a favor of him. "What is it you want?" he asked. She said, "Grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at your left in your kingdom." "You don't know what you're asking," Jesus said to them. "Can you drink the cup I am going to drink?" "We can," they answered. Jesus said to them, "You will indeed drink from my cup, but to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared for by my Father." When the 10 heard about this, they were indignant with the two brothers. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and give his life as a ransom for many."
Everything rises and falls on leadership. That was something that I heard over and over again as a young leader. In fact, I used to read a lot of books by leadership guru John Maxwell. He was famous for that statement. Everything rises and falls on leadership. It's the idea that in any organization, whether it's a family or a church or a company or even a country, that the leader has a disproportionate impact on the success or failure of that entire group. And it's a pretty hard claim to deny, actually. Just think about this. Think of the impact on a family of an alcoholic, abusive father. Or think about how a sports team can change the coach or the GM and see the entire culture of the team change. Think about the success that a country can experience when it is unified under a strong leader. Or think about the large salaries that companies are willing to pay to get the right CEO at the helm. They know that the right person in leadership can result in everyone doing better, and they're willing to pay a premium for that. So again, everything rises and falls on leadership. Leadership really matters. The same is true in the church. In Romans chapter 12, Paul exhorts those who are gifted as leaders to lead with diligence. And the church needs good leaders just like every organization does. Now, throughout history, there has also been a dark side to leadership. And I suppose the same thing that makes like a knife effective is what also makes it dangerous, right? There's kind of the dark side in a lot of things. But there's no shortage, even in recent history, of stories of people who seem to have many leadership strengths but end up doing great damage. Usually, this is not because of their pure leadership skills as much as it is about their character. And this subject of leadership is just another topic that highlights God's timeless wisdom. Because when you look at the New Testament and the way that it deals with leadership, you quickly see that the emphasis is always on character. Now, that shouldn't be a surprise for us. After all, Jesus turned leadership on its head when he said that leadership wasn't about lording your authority over people, but actually serving people. But, you know, some leaders, they have great charisma, and they're able to draw a great crowd. Some leaders, they have amazing organizational skills. Some are great strategists. Others are great mobilizers. You can think of all of these different strengths. A leader who possesses a lot of these traits can be very effective, but here's the thing. A leader who possesses all of these things and more, but who doesn't have adequate character, will never survive to use their gifts to their full potential. and we see stories of this over and over again. I've noticed over the years that leadership is both innate and developed, right? But character always has to be developed. It always has to be. Paul shows a lot of wisdom as he informs Timothy in this passage that we're going to look at today about leadership. He knows that he needs to see many leaders developed in order for the church to multiply and to spread, as we know that it did during the first century. But instead of telling Timothy to look for people with great leadership skills, he tells him instead to look for people with leadership character. And that tells me something about the Apostle Paul. It's that Paul believed that the end game of spreading the gospel was going to be best accomplished if the church had steady people of character rather than flashy people of skill and charisma. You see, in the long run, we're better off having church leaders who are strong in character, even if that results in growth being a little bit slower. Now, if we can add to that character a lot of skill, which we can, then that's kind of the best of both worlds. But character has to be there first. Paul is focused on what Timothy really needs to know here in this book of 1 Timothy. That's what we've been talking about in this series, Paul's pro tips. And he chooses to go with character. Well, welcome back to our series, Paul's Pro Tips. We are in week 3 of a 10-week series through the books of 1 and 2 Timothy, where we see an older pastor, Paul, passing along essential information to his protege, Timothy. In the first week, the tip of the week was fight for truth. That was chapter 1. In chapter 2, last week, we talked about worshiping. Worship well. And worshiping not so much as we often think of it in terms of singing or whatever, but in terms of when we gather together as a corporate body and how we organize ourselves in that way. Today, we're looking at the third pro tip. Tip of the day is raise the leadership bar. Raise the leadership bar. If you're familiar with the book of Acts, you will know that Paul made numerous missionary voyages as he spread the gospel across Europe at that time. And his strategy, divinely inspired, of course, was to establish churches in each town where he visited. And then, on subsequent trips, he would stop back at those same churches and he would appoint elders and leaders who could oversee the ministry long term. That was the strategy that he employed. As we saw in chapter 1 of 1 Timothy, Timothy was left behind in Ephesus as Paul went on to Macedonia. He did the same thing with Titus. In fact, we can see this in Titus chapter 1, verse 5. Paul says, "The reason I left you in Crete was that you might put in order what was left unfinished and appoint elders in every town as I directed you." So he did the exact same thing with Titus, who was another young pastor. Timothy had been chosen as a leader. Now he is responsible for making sure that other churches get good leaders in place. And so Paul is just kind of passing on this leadership baton, and he's teaching his protege, Timothy, how to find good leaders. Here's a pro tip, guys. When you raise the leadership bar, everyone benefits. Everyone benefits. And I don't care what organization you're talking about, the church included, when you raise the leadership bar, everyone benefits. You know, as a kid, I had the opportunity to visit many different churches and to see the leadership in those churches. My dad was a pastor for some time, and I was kind of in that inner circle, and I got to see a lot of stuff. I can remember seeing churches that were just a mess, like no direction, no organization, no vision. Not only were many pastors poor leaders, but they would also empower people who were weak in character in their church, and that just compounded the dysfunction of some of these churches that I would visit and get to know. When I became a pastor, like 30 years ago now, hard to believe, not only did I want to be the best leader that I could be, but I really wanted to make sure that any church that I was leading empowered the right people. Jesus taught us that no servant is greater than his master. In other words, a person can't lead others to do what he is unable to do. He has neither the skills nor the moral authority to do that. And so, you know, I really wanted to make sure that people were, you know, of high character, that we were empowering to leadership. If there's one thing that brings me great joy here at our church at Renew, it's that we've had excellent leaders over the years. People not only of skill, but also of character. And we've made a real effort over the years not to allow people into leadership who were just not qualified for it. We were happier to wait or just to find people that had the character that we needed. And that has really stood us in good stead. Well, we're going to start today by looking at overseers and elders. Let's start by reading the first seven verses of chapter 3. Paul says, "Here's a trustworthy saying. If anyone sets his heart on being an overseer, he desires a noble task. Now the overseer must be above reproach, the husband of but one wife, temperate, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not given to drunkenness, not violent but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. He must manage his own family well and see that his children obey him with proper respect. If anyone does not know how to manage his own family, how can he take care of God's church? He must not be a recent convert, or he may become conceited and fall under the same judgment as the devil. He must also have a good reputation with outsiders so that he will not fall into disgrace and into the devil's trap." Well, as we look here, guys, this word overseer, episkope, is actually someone who looks over. That's literally what the word means in Greek when you break it down. Epi is upon or over. Skopos is to see, right? Sight. So they oversee everything. Older translations sometimes use the term bishop for this word, but it's all the same thing. In that Titus passage that I referenced just a minute ago, Paul equates the term elder, which is presbyteros, it's where we get the word Presbyterian from. He equates that word elder with the term overseer, and he basically uses them interchangeably. So just a little information for you. In the New Testament, these terms, overseer, bishop, and elder, they're interchangeable. They're all referring to the same office in the church, okay? The same leader, all right? In verse 3, the first thing that we see is that being an overseer is a noble task. This is the word that Paul uses. And I think that's a really important place to start as we dig into this passage. The word there is kalos in Greek. It means good, but also honorable or noble, as it's translated here. It is the word for good that has the connotation of beauty or excellence to it. It's kind of like in French, like you have bon and you also have beau. This would be more like beau. It's got that idea of beauty to it, that, you know, leadership, being an elder in a church, it's a noble thing. There's something beautiful or excellent about it. I remind our elders sometimes of this fact, that it's really a noble thing that they're doing, to give of their time and their energy in order to be good examples, to keep a watchful eye over our church, and also to use their wisdom to make good decisions on behalf of the church. Like, that's a really noble thing that they do. In verse 2, Paul gets into a lengthy list of specific qualifications. And so I want to kind of go through those quickly and just spend a little time on each one. First one, he says, is above reproach. And the idea here is that you're without blame, that you can't be accused of anything significant in regard to your character that would disqualify you from doing what you do. We all make mistakes, but being above reproach, it's that consistent level of character. The husband of one wife. Well, back at that in those days, it wasn't, you know, that uncommon for someone to be a polygamist, so he was wanting to rule that out. And some people have, you know, extrapolated today to say, well, what if someone's divorced? Our belief at Renew Church, and a lot of churches would see it this way, is that if someone is divorced, that they should really take the time to show that their marriage that they're in now is solid, right, before they get into this role of being an elder. That word temperate, well, it means sober-minded, and that would include not being intoxicated or, you know, using drugs that make us intoxicated, not to say that we never use medications or whatever, or, you know, drugs for good reasons, but just the idea that we're sober-minded, that we're clear-minded so that we can think properly. Self-controlled is the next one. It literally means of a sound mind, and it refers to being a prudent person, someone who is balanced and can make good decisions. The next one is respectable. The idea here is of being well-ordered. If you were actually digging into the word, the idea that's in this word is that you're someone who orders things in your life, that your life is in control and orderly. And, you know, when you meet someone like that, you have to say that is respectable. When you see that they just have their stuff in order, it speaks well of them. The next one's a huge one. It's hospitable. And the literal word in Greek here means loving strangers. That's literally what it means. I love that. And you know, anybody can just hang out with their friends, right? We all love to hang out with our friends or with our family. That's not what it means to be hospitable. Hospitable means that you love strangers, that you're willing to bring people that you don't know into your home and to get to know them. Guys, what an amazing gift. And, you know, not just a gift, but a character trait that we need to develop. And it's something that elders are supposed to have. The next one is the ability to teach. Now, this doesn't mean that you have to be specifically gifted as a teacher, that that's one of your top spiritual gifts, but it doesn't hurt, and it does mean that you are able to speak or to teach. And that's important, because as an elder, you're leading, and you're going to have to be able to teach to some degree in order to, you know, exercise that leadership. The next one that we see there is not given to drunkenness. The literal word here is paroinos, oinos being the word for wine, and it means given to wine or to drunkenness, right? As elders, that's not for us. In fact, in the Old Testament, it talks about leaders not being ones that are, you know, given to wine, and this is the same idea carried forward here. The next one is not violent, but gentle. Literally, in Greek, it's not a striker, someone who hits people, right? Talking about things like domestic violence or just being someone who gets into the fisticuffs, right? Not being a fighter. Gentle here, when he says not a fighter but gentle, has the idea of being equitable or fair, even more than just being, you know, soft-spirited. It's this idea that you can be equitable and fair. A good mediator is kind of in that idea. The next one, not quarrelsome. Again, literally here, it's not fighting, not so much in the physical type of fighting, but that, you know, arguing, kind of verbal fighting. And the idea of not being contentious is really the heart here of this word. The next one, not a lover of money. So this is someone who is not consumed in their life with making more money. You know, some people, they have a really hard time and they get into that and that's all that they can focus on. That's not what you want as an elder in your church. It's also someone who's not into get-rich-quick schemes, right? Somebody that's just trying to, you know, make money quickly. No, the Bible talks about consistently working hard and over time growing in wealth. It's also probably meaning that you don't want somebody that's drowning in debt. It probably means that they're not somebody that's managed their money really well. And sometimes that happens because they have a love of money that causes them to misuse it and not manage it well. The next one is managing his own house well. And guys, this is one that I take very, very seriously, and I've always taken seriously over the years, for myself personally and also for other elders that I've had in our church. In fact, here's a little pro tip for you. Elders' kids, they don't need to be perfect, and I want to make that really clear. They don't need to be perfect, but their behavior speaks volumes, and it earns a lot of respect or potentially disrespect for the elder. And I've just seen this over and over again, right? Paul asks a great rhetorical question here in this passage. He says, if someone can't manage their own household, how can they manage the household of God, right? And I really think that that's a fantastic question. And I tell elders this when we're doing elder training or orientation. I say, guys, you know, this whole thing of how you lead your family and your children, it really still is the best test that we have, right? It's not always the most accurate, but it's really still the best test that we have to see if somebody is able to lead in the church. If you can lead your family well and they follow you with respect and they you know, move along in the direction following God, then that's a really good indicator that you could help us in the church do the same thing for the entire congregation. Well, the next one is not a recent convert. Literally, in Greek, it means newly planted, not newly planted, which talks about being a new convert, a new Christian. I think that this also carries the idea that it's good to give people time when they're in a new church. Even if they've been a believer for a long time, when they're coming into a new church, maybe just becoming part of that congregation, that they should be given the time for people to get to know them and for them to get planted in that congregation. He says, if we don't do this, if you just grab people that are new believers or whatever, that they can fall into the condemnation of the devil. Well, we know what that is. The condemnation of the devil was that he was full of pride, right? And so really, when you kind of boil this all down, what you see is the greatest thing that experience teaches is humility. The reason why we give people the time to grow up in their faith is hopefully that will teach them humility so that they can lead in this way and not fall into that condemnation of the devil, which is pride, which we're all prone to. The next one is a good reputation outside of the church. You know, the devil is really active. He's mentioned in the last, you know, in the last idea, in the last verse, now he's mentioned here again. And if he can't get us with pride, you know what he'll do? He'll try to have us hurt our own reputation, to blow our own testimony. You know, it's counterproductive to place someone as a spiritual leader in the church if people outside of the church don't respect them. I mean, think about it. Those people will think less of our entire church if we do something like that. They're like, why would they get that person to lead? I know what they're like, right? In Proverbs chapter 22, look at what it says about a good name. It says, a good name is more desirable than great riches. To be esteemed is better than silver or gold. And so that reputation that you have, you build that over your entire life. And people outside of the church, they see it too. Well, guys, as you can see, this list is really long. But here's a little pro tip I want you to be really clear about today. Every qualification for eldership is something that every believer has already been called to. This chapter is for everybody. So if you're there today and you're saying, well, I don't ever aspire to being an elder, I'm not never going to be an elder in the church, I'm just going to kind of take a nap on this one. No, this is for everybody. I was actually speaking with a retired pastor this week about this passage, and he pointed that out to me, and it was a good reminder. You know, there's nothing shocking here as you read this passage. This is general Christian good behavior, right? When you really look at this passage. Elders just need to be more consistent in it, right? We want our elders as leaders to exemplify, you know, all of these good character traits. But this is stuff that all of us need to be paying attention to and building into our lives. I would actually like to introduce you to our elders today. All right, so let's just take a little pause here. I want you to be aware of those people that have been serving in this very important role in our church. Now, very recently, we had three guys who had served for quite some time who just stepped down. Aviv Talang moved away, and he stepped down. And then also coming to the end of their terms were Rob Wood and also Gerald Tarsisius. And for Rob and Gerald, I just really want to give a shout out to those two guys. They served for the entire length of our church as Renew, since we came together as Renew Church, really put in a lot of hours, a lot of time, and just gave a lot of excellent oversight. So kudos to you guys. Currently, our elder board, first of all, it consists of those of us that are on the executive team. So myself, Eric Russell, and then also Pastor Mitch Van Rassel. The three of us are on staff, so we're non-voting members of the board, but we do participate in those board meetings, and I chair the board as pastor of the church. But then we also have Terry McDonald, who is the president of the board, just newly elected to that role. Barry Jones, Pastor Barry, is vice president. And Greg Bifus is our secretary treasurer. He's also a minute taker extraordinaire, just in case you didn't know. We also have Mike Amaral, Gary Coates, and Darcy McCallum, who are currently on the board. So when you see these guys, I want you to really show appreciation to them. Go up to them, thank them. Also know that if you ever have questions about the church or about doctrine or different things, you can talk to these guys about it. These guys are wise men who understand God's word, understand the church and the way that it operates. In fact, Pastor Barry and Darcy McCallum are both former pastors. So we're really blessed to have the guys that we have. And we try to find men that are connected throughout our church family in all of the different regions. So you'll see that representation on our board. We work really hard at that. We'll also be trying to add a couple of more elders this year. But as you can see, we only have male elders. We talked about the reasons for that last week. You can go back and check that out if you didn't see it. You can also see in this passage that we're looking at today that it really is talking about men. And it's pretty clear in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and in other passages that talk about elders as well. I believe that you will see that these men, while not perfect, they really do embody the character that the Bible talks about, that Paul is talking about here this morning. All right, let's keep moving on to deacons as we pick it up at verse 8. It says, deacons, likewise, are to be men worthy of respect, sincere, not indulging in much wine, and not pursuing dishonest gain. They must keep hold of the deep truths of the faith with a clear conscience. They must first be tested, and then, if there is nothing against them, let them serve as deacons. All right, well, the word deacon, diakonos, literally means in Greek, servant. That's literally what it means, which can be used generically for just someone who's serving, even like serving on tables, like as a waiter, or anyone who serves in any capacity in the church. But the construction here, where it says, in the same way deacons, which is making a parallel to the passage on elders, along with the fact that Paul is stipulating qualifications for this role, it suggests that this is a function in the church in the way that he's using the word here, not just the general sense of a servant. Here at Renew, we would see anyone who serves by leading other people in some kind of a ministry as a deacon. Although we don't usually use the term because it tends to create a lot of confusion because people from different churches and backgrounds kind of interpret what the role is differently. Here at Renew, we would generally say that a group leader or a ministry leader, that these are significant leaders in our church, and we would kind of see them as being deacons, okay? Pro tip for you guys. Anytime someone steps up and takes responsibility for other people, that is a significant thing, all right? And I really want you to understand, this is significant leadership. When people are leading ministries or leading Renew groups at our church, that's significant leadership. It serves the church well when we raise the bar on everyone who is serving people in these ways. That just makes the entire church better when we hold everyone who's leading to certain expectations. And so Paul gives Timothy another list of qualifications here, this time for deacons. And as we go through, I just want you to remember a couple of things as we're looking at these qualifications. First of all, since elders are higher in rank than deacons in the church, they should be strong with all of these points as well. You'll see that some of them are repeated, but elders should really be working on these too. Secondly, that these are more characteristics of good Christians that all Christians should aspire to. We said that before. I'll say it again. The ones that you see here under deacons, same thing. We should all be aspiring to these. And then thirdly, I would say, if we work on these characteristics now, these aspects of Christian character, maybe someday we will be called to serve on, to serve in the church as an elder or as a ministry leader. So start working on these things now. Start really focusing on them. Say, where am I weak? Where do I need to work more on these? Ask a friend, ask someone that knows you well. Say, what are some of the things that I should be working on? They may, you know, be really eager to point some of those things out. All right, let's keep going. Qualifications for deacons. First one, worthy of respect. That just is a repeated concept from the first list. The word here denotes being serious and being dignified. In fact, here's a little pro tip for you. You know, it's good to be lighthearted and fun, and we love people like that in our church. You know, you always like those kind of fun people. But one of the things I've learned, it takes wisdom to do that while still being taken seriously. I remember as a young pastor, that was something I had to work on, right? Like, I still want to be fun, but I also have to remember there's ways and times for doing that for people still to take you seriously, all right? Sincere is the next characteristic. Now, this is one where I would say this is actually a regrettable translation in the NIV. It's a weak translation. Literally, the Greek word here is dialogos, and it literally means not double-tongued or double in speech. It's that word logos, right, of a word, not being double-worded, double-tongued. A better translation would actually be deceitful, not deceitful or misleading. That would actually be a more accurate translation. In fact, look at what the Discovery Bible says here. I love this. It says, dialogos, double speaking, describes someone leaving a deliberate misimpression, acting like a spiritual weather vane by reversing their position, taking different sides of an issue whenever it's convenient or expedient. This person is unstable, vacillating, speaking out of both sides of their mouth. You see what we're talking about here with this word dialogos? You know, we know people like this. Maybe we struggle with that ourselves. This is not the kind of person we want in leadership, right? Deacons are not to be these kinds of people. Ministry leaders are not supposed to be like saying one thing to one person and then something else to someone else. Doesn't work. All right, let's keep moving. The next one is not indulging in much wine. Again, this is a repeated one, same as the elders. We'll keep moving. Next one, not pursuing dishonest gain. Well, this is similar to not being a lover of money, but here the focus being of, you know, keeping things above board, that whole honesty part of it. So this would include things like not taking advantage of people, or it would include ideas like not cheating on your taxes, or, you know, exploiting gray areas, right? Trying to be above board in everything. Next one, holding deep truths with a clear conscience. Now, deep truths here, when you look at it in Greek, actually it says the mystery of the faith. And I think it's just referring to, you know, the Christian faith. It just means that they live their Christian faith with a clear conscience before God in everything that they do. And guys, living with a clear conscience, wow, that's a great indicator that you're in a good place before God. The last one for deacons is that they be tested. So guys, go out and get your COVID test this week if you want to be a deacon. No, that's not what we're talking about. I was not going to mention COVID at all this week, but you can't pass that up, right? I couldn't do that. Anyway, this is similar to not being a novice or not being a recent convert. And it's good to be tested as a person. I mean, think about this, guys. Here's a little pro tip. Our overseers or elders at our church are always watching as you go through your difficulties. I want you to know this, Renew Church. People are watching, right? The way that you overcome your trials speaks volumes about your faith and your character. And we want to see when people go through tests, when they go through trials, we love to see people coming through that. We love to see their character growing. Because we look at that and we say, you know, these people are becoming even more useful to the entire church. And we want to see people like that getting into roles of leadership so that they can share the things that they've learned through their trials with other people. Being tested is a really great thing. Well, when we get to verse 11, it talks about the women. All right, so let's go ahead and read that verse. Verse 11 says, "In the same way, their wives are to be women worthy of respect, not malicious talkers, but temperate and trustworthy in everything." So when it starts here and it says, "in the same way, the women," there's been different ways that people have taken this. I think this is probably referring to deacons' wives, given that Paul continues talking about deacons in the next verse. But some people have seen this as referring to women as deaconesses. I don't necessarily see that here in this passage, but if you jumped over to Romans chapter 16, you would see that Phoebe is there referred to as a deaconess or a servant in Romans 16, 1. We also see many women in the New Testament commended by Paul for serving at a higher level, such as Phoebe and other people. So we probably shouldn't rule that out as a possibility here in this passage. And I think that it is most likely that women did serve as deacons in the early church and as what we would call ministry leaders in a variety of different ways. Either way, for whatever we see in this passage, this is great advice for women in particular and for everyone in general, and particularly as we're talking about people in leadership. So let's look at some of these qualifications here. Again, worthy of respect. This is one that was mentioned already. The next one it says is not malicious talkers. And this is funny, me diabolos. When you read this in Greek, and this is something that, you know, makes geeks like me that went to seminary laugh, because when you actually read this in Greek and you're reading it, it literally looks like it is. It's saying not devilish. That's what diabolos means, devilish. We just forget sometimes that the word for slanderer and devil are the same word, right? Remember, the devil is the accuser. That's literally built into his name, slander or accuser. So not being a malicious talker means not being diabolical, right? That's literally what it means, and it made me laugh. It's a great reminder that backbiting and gossip, listen, guys, they're satanic. They're literally satanic. When you talk behind someone's back to tarnish their reputation, you are acting just like the devil. Okay? Next one, temperate. They need to be temperate. We mentioned this one already. Let's go to the last one there. Then trustworthy in all things. Now, this word is most literally faithful in all things. The word pistis is being used there in Greek. I mentioned last week how women have carried the church over the centuries. And Paul recognizes here the need for women to be reliable and faithful. I think that's what he's saying here when he says trustworthy in all things. Again, another pro tip here, and this one's directed to you women. Women, our men are challenged by your example when you are faithful and reliable. They really are, and I want you to understand that. You know, men, I know this because I am one, men love to rise to a challenge and be a 10-minute hero. Have you noticed this? We love that. One little thing that we can jump in there and, you know, succeed at it. Woohoo, we helped out, 10-minute hero. We don't always do as well being strong and steady over the long haul, over months and years and decades. So women, keep challenging us. When you are trustworthy, as it talks about here, faithful, it really challenges the entire church body, including the men. All right, it jumps back to the deacons again, verses 12 and 13. Let's go ahead and read that. It says, a deacon must be the husband of but one wife and must manage his children and his household well. Those who have served well gain an excellent standing and great assurance in their faith in Christ Jesus. Well, there's a couple more words here for the men, but again, they apply to everyone. The first one is faithful to his wife. And I would just say this, guys, after, you know, cases of infidelity or divorce, we believe that people need time to prove themselves when things like that happen, right? They need time to show that they're now in a stable situation, a stable relationship, usually years of time before then we take them into these higher roles of leadership. And I think that's just wise to do. And then the next one that's mentioned is he manages his children and household well. Again, that was mentioned already under the section on elders, but it's so, so important, and I think that's why it gets repeated. We get to verse 13, and I love it because it's actually worded like a pro tip. Look at what it says in verse 13. It says, those who have served well gain an excellent standing and great assurance in their faith in Christ Jesus. Guys, that's a pro tip. You know, we tend to think of our faith like this you're in or you're out kind of thing. But this verse actually suggests a lot more nuance. It suggests that some people have a more excellent standing with God. And by that, I understand a closer walk with God, a deeper commitment to God, a deeper relationship with Him and appreciation of Him. And guys, this deeper commitment, it says in this verse, results in great assurance, a greater assurance than the average person has. Now note this, this is important to note. Salvation is by faith, we know that. It's not by works. So everyone who has placed their faith in Christ should feel secure, because you are, you're secure in Christ. But it's funny how we all feel more secure when we live out our faith well. It's just, I've seen this over and over again. I've often used the example of a mechanic, right? A mechanic who says, honey, I'm going to work today, and gets up, dresses up in his mechanic clothes, his overalls, whatever they wear, right? Goes out the door, drives off to work, but she doesn't know it, but he never worked on a car all day, right? He never actually went to the garage, he went somewhere else. He hasn't been working on cars for years, right? But he wants people to think that he's a mechanic. And, you know, maybe he is. Maybe he's trained as being a mechanic. Maybe he's certified as a mechanic. But he's not doing mechanic work every day. So he comes home and, you know, maybe he's not feeling much like a mechanic. Well, sometimes Christians are the same way, guys. Sometimes as Christians, we want to feel like a Christian without actually living like one. And I think that's kind of the point here that Paul's making. We have that greater assurance as we live out our faith. Our relationship with God is like any other relationship. Think about it. The more we put into it, the more we get out of it. That's just how relationships work. When it comes to leadership in the church, God is looking for people who, he says, serve well and gain a more excellent standing, right? People who can inspire the entire church by their love and their faithfulness. As people look at them, they say, wow, I want to be like them. So we all have the ability to raise the leadership bar, guys. We don't have to be in one of these leadership roles. We all have the ability to live out our lives in a way that raises the leadership bar and strengthens the whole congregation. Finally, we see in verses 14 to 16, Paul's reasons for Paul's instructions. So let's just read those last couple of verses. Although I hope to come to you soon, I am writing you these instructions so that if I am delayed, Timothy, you will know how people ought to conduct themselves in God's household, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and foundation of the truth. Beyond all question, the mystery of godliness is great. He appeared in a body, was vindicated by the Spirit, was seen by angels, was preached among the nations, was believed on in the world, and was taken up in glory. Well, verses 14 and 15 here, Paul says that he's writing so that people know how to behave in the church. And he's not talking about in a certain building. He's talking about in our church community, in a community of people that we're living in. And then, very interesting, he calls the church God's household, right? God's called out people. And he says that it is the pillar and foundation of the truth. Now, let me give you a little question here. Did you know that the church, the community of God's called out people, is the pillar and foundation of the truth? Have you ever thought about that? What does that actually mean? Well, God's word is truth, right? But we are the pillar and foundation that support that truth and that hold it up so that the world can see it. Think about that. That's who we are as the church. You know, as we said last week, we have been called to be apostles and heralds of this great mystery. And the mystery, in one word, it's Christ. It's that Christ has come. It's what Christ has done for us. It is from him that true godliness springs. That's what Paul says here in the passage. And then he quotes an ancient hymn that speaks of that mystery. And we're going to end today by actually reading that together. Before we do, I just want to say, remember that Christ is the one who inspires everything that is good. He is the one who has shown us what is good, what is true. And he is the one who has motivated us by his own life and death to live godly lives. He is the greatest leader who has ever lived. And if we want to raise the leadership bar, guys, we need to get to know him better and we need to emulate him more. So let's read together this mystery as we conclude today. He appeared in the flesh, was vindicated by the Spirit, was seen by angels, was preached among the nations, was believed on in the world, and was taken up in glory. Guys, we'll see you next Sunday. Thanks for joining us today.